Welcome to another episode of Vanguard Radio. I'm your host, John Jones, filling in this week for Marcelo Sacdeo. Our first story is called Geospectrum, delivered active towards sonar to the Royal Canadian Navy. Geospectrum Technologies, or GTI as it's known, is proud to announce that the containerized version of TRAPS, towed, reelable, active, passive sonar, was delivered to the Royal Canadian Navy, RCN, and is ready for ship installation and operation. The purchase was made through the Build in Canada Innovation Program. TRAPS is an innovative low-frequency variable depth sonar intended for detection, tracking, and classification of submarines, midget submarines, surface vessels, and torpedoes. Its wet end towed array's acoustic elements are a vertical projector and receive array. TRAPS' unique advantage is that its projector array is reelable and stows on the winch drum with the receive array and tow cable. Thus, only a simple fair lead is used with the winch, removing the need for a dedicated, heavy, and costly deployment recovery system. Various systems variants are available to suit the different performance requirements in vessel sizes, from destroyers and frigates through corvettes, OPVs, patrol vessels, and even USVSs. The containerized configuration is implemented in a standard 20-foot ISO container, empowering any vessel of opportunity with the advanced and high-performance ASW module, requiring only deck space and electric power from the vessel. The inherent benefits of TRAPS meets the growing need for lower-cost, compact ASW sensors that enable cost-saving both in the system and in avoiding costly vessel adaptations. TRAPS can be delivered standalone or as part of a integrated sonar suite, including hull-mounted sonar and sonar buoy processor, and featuring bistatic and multistatic operation, all leveraging Geospectrum's RECView sonar processing and display system. TRAPS trials that were conducted proved capability to tow the source at vessel speeds exceeding 18 knots, with the receive array proving excellent performance with minimal self-noise. Paul Yeatman, president of GTI, commented, "We are very pleased with the results of TRAP testing. We are proud to offer users a high-performance, lower-cost, and compact ASW sensor that represents an excellent and available sonar choice for a wide variety of surface combatant and patrol vessels, as well as USVs, with a specific design available for Elbitz Seagull multi-mission USV. TRAPS can be used by navies for anti-submarine operations, as well as coast guards for anti-narco submissions." Just a little bit of information about Geospectrum Technologies, Inc. Geospectrum is a Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, Canada-based supplier of marine acoustics hardware and systems. Its range of offerings includes sonar and sonar upgrades, towed and hull-mounted, acoustic communication, submarine targets, diver deterrent systems, moored surveillance solutions, as well as very low-frequency VLF systems, and more. The company supplies its products to the defense, oil and gas surveillance, and environmental sectors, and Geospectrum is a wholly owned subsidiary of Elbit Systems Limited. Also, a little bit of information about the Build in Canada Innovation Program. The Innovation Procurement Program helps Canadian innovators get their product to market faster and helps them to succeed in the marketplace by buying and testing innovations in real operational settings. Through the program, innovators can sell their per commercial products or services for testing, but keep the intellectual product and retain all equity in their company. The program pays up to $500,000 for non-military innovations and up to $1 million for military innovations. Moving on to our next story, we're going to talk about the announcement that the defense minister just made for new programs for reservists. Canada's Minister of National Defense, Harjit Sajjan, announced the launch of the full-time summer employment program for reservists Tuesday in Kelowna. The program, explained Sajjan, will allow new and recently enrolled reservists the opportunity to work full-time from May 1st to August 31st each summer. This will be done for the first 4 years of their service, said Sajjan. Canada is investing in its citizen soldiers, assigning new roles, enhancing existing roles, and ensuring they are properly trained and equipped, he said, adding, what it means is that the communities will have more support. Units like the Dragoons can directly impact communities in times of need. We talk about filling sandbags during times of flooding, but it's not just filling sandbags, he told the crowd of reservists. You are saving people's homes through flooding, and we witnessed that last summer. The decision to fund full-time employment could significantly bolster enrollment at the BC Dragoons, said Lieutenant Colonel Mike McGinty, the Dragoons' commanding officer. Previously, employment could be offered as a week here or 2 to 3 weeks there. That wasn't enough to commit, said McGinty. Now we are offering a clear start-to-end period where we can recruit them. McGinty said he has 100 reservists now and has room to enlist another 60. The community benefit is that once there are more people working for the Dragoons, when there's a time of need, there will be more available resources to deploy in times of need such as fires and floods. Moving on to our next story, Canada is being invited to take a greater role in Iraq mission, says NATO general. NATO chief military policy advisor is sounding out Canada on the kind of commitment the country will make to the alliance expanding training missions in Iraq. General Pavel held meetings on Friday in Ottawa with senior officials, including the chief of defense staff. The Canadian military has a handful of combat engineers in the war-ravaged country under the NATO banner, training Iraqi soldiers in the finer points of bomb disposal. Separately, it has a larger contingent, including special forces troops, helicopters, intelligence officers, and a combat hospital, contributing to the U.S.-led coalition. There is a scope for doing more in Iraq and training Iraqi forces, Pavel told CBC News, and as I discussed with General Vance, Canada is ready to take a greater role in that area. The decision to proceed with expanded training mission was given the green light by NATO defense ministers in Brussels last month. Pavel said the alliance's top military commander, U.S. General Curtis Scaparotti, is deep into the planning phase now. Canada, he says, is on General Scaparotti's radar because of the special attributes it could bring to the campaign to defeat Islamic State extremists. General Pavel, in an interview on March 9, 2018, says Canada can contribute more to the training of Iraqi forces. He was in Ottawa to brief Canadian officials about the new training mission in the war-torn country. Canada being in Iraq for some time, having significant experience but also capabilities, will play an important role in this construct, said Pavel, who has served Chief of the General Staff of Armed Forces of the Czech Republic. After the meeting with his counterparts, Defense Minister Harjit Sajjan said Canada is interested in contributing, but will wait to learn more after the alliance figures out what sort of troops and equipment it needs. The Liberal government is still months away from making a decision on the mission. The expanded NATO mission will be headquartered in Baghdad, but some elements are expected to operate in Erbil, the capital of the semi-autonomous Kurdish region in northern Iraq. Initial estimates say the overall deployment could involve up to 200 troops. Much of the training of Iraqi and Kurdish forces to this point has involved conventional fighting skills and tactics. The training has been carried out under the auspices of U.S.-led coalition. Tensions between the central government in Baghdad and separatist-minded Kurds has led to a suspension of some of that assistance. The U.S. is keen to stabilize Iraq after almost 4 years of intense fighting to eject Islamic State extremists, who conquered vast swaths of territory in the north and the west of the country. Iraqi forces, which Washington spent billions training and equipping after the 2003 invasion, melted away in the face of the ISIS onslaught. NATO is eager to repeat the success of its training mission in Afghanistan. There, it helped the Americans raise a 354,000-strong army and police force, which has, despite horrendous casualties, withstood brutal Taliban assaults. Pavel said Friday that the door is open to mission participation by partners outside of NATO, similar to the experience in Afghanistan, where the Australians joined alliance troops. The idea is to turn current training activity into a proper mission, said Pavel, who was decorated for his heroism in Bosnia after leading the rescue of 55 French soldiers being held by Serbian forces. Canada had a small military team on standby to take part in a high-profile United Nations peacekeeping mission in Colombia, but foot-dragging in Ottawa's part saw the other countries fill up the mission's ranks instead, now newly released documents reveal. The Army identified, screened, and trained 19 Spanish-speaking soldiers to act as ceasefire observers in the South American country, which is emerging from 5 decades of guerrilla war. The troops were, according to a briefing note prepared for Defense Minister Harjit Sajjan, ready to go by October 2016, just weeks after the Liberal government committed itself to deploying 600 troops and 150 police officers in support of UN-led peace operations. The soldiers remained on standby for months. A decision to deploy them, however, remained in limbo until it was too late. No Canadian Armed Forces nominations were submitted to the UN, and as of March 2017, the mission is currently fully manned with no foreseen additional requirements from Canada, said the March 30, 2017 briefing note obtained by CBC News under the Access to Information legislation. Chief of Defense Staff General Jonathan Vance, the country's top military commander, said the mission was considered, but he had concerns about how well protected the troops would be in the event of trouble. He said concerns about force security are a good reason for everything as to why we do and do not do everything as the UN asks us. Chief of Defense General Jonathan Vance said, Canada did end up deploying 2 officers to support the special political mission in that country. Ultimately, it would have been up to the federal cabinet to decide whether to participate in the mission. The UN mission in Colombia was one of the more benign deployments available in Canada in terms of mandate and risk. In terms of lower risk mission, over 450 unarmed soldiers in 40 locations acted as observers supervising the disarming of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC as it's otherwise known of. This was a mission that was more in line with the Canadian public's perception of peacekeeping. The mission certainly presents a lower risk to peacekeepers than the tribal jihadist-fueled bloodshed in Mali, or the civil war in the corruption-tainted Democratic Republic of Congo, both sites of current UN peacekeeping operations. It is startling that we had the personnel trained and we didn't deploy them, said Walter Dorn, a professor at the Canadian Forces Staff College. He said Canada's failure to send soldiers to one of the most auspicious missions on the UN's plate throws in doubt the Liberals' election pledge to return to peacekeeping in a meaningful way. Since the 2015 election, the Liberal government and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's declaration that Canada is back on the world stage, the UN has offered Canada a number of marquee posts and opportunities. According to the documents uncovered last summer by CBC News, Canada was offered command of the mission in Mali, asked to deploy troops to replace the Dutch contingent in the same country, bombarded with multiple requests for helicopter support, and asked to establish a police training mission in the volatile Central African Republic. All of the requests were turned down, much to the frustration of UN officials and diplomats with the European Union, who were courting Canada on separate but complementary peace deployments and training in the region. The cabinet is just not able to make up its mind about where it wants to deploy, said Dorn. It seems that there is eagerness at some levels of the Canadian government, but not others. Last fall, Trudeau laid out the Liberal government's roadmap for rejoining peacekeeping, which included phased deployment of transport planes, helicopters, military trainers, and a 200-strong rapid reaction force over a 5-year period. Where they'll go and when is still the subject of discussions. The federal government has also made an important social commitment to deploy more women peacekeepers and to end the exploitation of child soldiers. Dorn said Canada's contribution to the UN mission is at an all-time low. At the end of December, Canada only had 43 peacekeepers deployed on various missions. Well, those are the stories for the week. I'm your host, John Jones, filling in for Marcelo Sacdeo, and it was great to be with you.